Welcome to the Experience Darden podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to welcome back Senior Associate Dean for the Residential MBA program, Tom Steinberg. As noted, Tom has been on the podcast before, but we invited him back on the podcast to talk more about all the planning that took place over the summer to get ready for the start of school. We also talked with him a little bit about how teaching is going so far this semester, plans for the January start group in the class of 2022, and much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Tom Steinberg. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brett. Really appreciate it.
I should say welcome back to the podcast. You've already been on once, but excited to have you back on the podcast. Felt like this was a great time to have you rejoin us here on the podcast to talk about, you know, start of school and everything that's going on. But before we get to that, I want to check in with you and see how are you and your family doing during this time?
We're doing really well. I have two kids, a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old, and my 15-year-old is maybe a bit more crazy than the rest of us, but we're all healthy and happy and no big things to complain about. So everything's good. Thanks for asking. How about you?
Everything's good. Had a chance to come down here and spend a little time in North Carolina with my parents. And so it's been nice to get out of DC for a few weeks and enjoy a little bit more elbow room and catch up with family. So that's been nice. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad to hear that.
So I thought this would be a good opportunity for our prospective students to hear about, you know, the summer and all the planning that went in to the start of school and sort of getting things ready for our class of 2022, but also to talk about, you know, what's to come and looking ahead. So I recognize you probably had countless meetings during the summer and you were very much involved with the sort of planning process around, you know, how are we going to do this with a hybrid class and virtual class? And so can you talk a little bit more about that process generally? I know it was probably a ton of meetings and a lot of different people were working together, but the high level, what did that process look like?
Yeah, it was all encompassing to say the least. When we started getting ready for the fall, we realized it would be, a really big problem to solve. And I put together a cross-functional team, which is known as the Start of School Committee now, to work on the academic and the social side of planning. And then there's another group that was looking at health of the school and opening up the building, which I participated in as well. And we just developed some workflows that would try to solve the big problems. I mean, I think on one side of the house, you're trying to figure out, like, how do we put on an awesome academic experience that lives up to what we expect to do at Darden, which is very, very thought-provoking and pushes people to grow and learn. And we want to do that with all the rigor that we would do in any environment. And we're also worried about students' health. And so we had to think about how do we protect health and faculty health and staff health and make sure everybody stays safe. So a lot of people, to say the least, looked at this problem, and I'm really, really happy with where we ended up by the end. And it's really impressive.
So we've talked a bit here on the podcast about the quarter four experience from, oh gosh, it seems like forever ago, but it's sort of the 2019-2020 academic year and the sort of shift to virtual classes. Was that helpful to the start of school committee as you thought about and planned for what's to come here?
Yeah, it was really helpful because we had a fairly smooth transition to Q4 from traditional teaching to just online. So we didn't have the hybrid classrooms at that point. And we turned it around in 2 weeks, which was quite a feat. And so when we started thinking about the fall, we went back and asked ourselves what went well and what do we want to replicate. And I think the biggest learning that we had from that time period is that one of our keys to success was that we were flexible. We were willing to make changes when, you know, the health crisis kept getting worse. And, you know, this was early days. So every day it seemed like something different would break. You know, the NBA shut down, sports league shut down, and no basketball tournament in the NCAA. But as that continued to erode, we were able to change our plans because we had developed multiple plans, thought about all the scenarios that might happen. And as things got worse, we didn't worry about it because we knew we had a plan in place if things did get worse, and we could switch pretty easily. And I think that was one of our big learnings from Q4. And before we got started looking for the summer, you know, thinking about the fall, and we knew we'd be planning all summer, we developed a set of principles that were really important to us. You know, things that we knew we'd have to make some difficult calls, some difficult trade-offs, but what would our guiding principles be moving forward? And I'm really, really glad we went through that exercise because Lord knows we we had some challenging discussions over the summer about just what it is we wanted to do. And I think both of those things really turned out to be very helpful for us as we move forward.
Have you ever, I mean, I think we all have acknowledged the sort of exceptional nature of these times, but are there any past experiences that you drew upon as you were working with the Start of School Committee and managing through this situation where you have this externality that you don't completely control and that continues to change and evolve every day? Anything that you drew upon from prior experience?
Yeah, actually, I had a couple of really important work experiences that helped me in this. One is I had actually been through crises before when in my professional life. When I was at Xerox, we put out a compensation plan just as I joined the incentive strategy group that was terrible. And about 15% of the sales force left the company by May of that year, of the following year that once the plan was launched. And it was a huge deal at the company because if you lose salespeople, basically you lose revenue. And you know, a lot of people got moved out of their positions or lost their jobs following that crisis. And we spent a year recovering in the compensation plan, developing a new one and launching in the field, which turned out to be really successful. From that experience, I learned how to build consensus, how to go out and have difficult conversations with sales reps about their pay. People get very upset about their pay if it's not right. And I learned to defend strategy and think about how to develop strategy through that experience, working with councils, reps, and getting to a better solution. I think that was really useful to me. And another thing that turned out to be quite useful was I've done some research on selling new products. And one of the things about new to the world products is it's they often get launched in periods of enormous change. And one of the things I was really surprised by in that research project was how much emotions played in the salespeople, their ability to do their job. And effective salespeople have an ability to figure out what they're responsible for or what they're not responsible for. They have an ability to move with the market and make decisions in times of uncertainty and control their emotions. And that research project turned out to be really useful because I knew we'd be in a time of high stress, that people would react to decisions emotionally, and just figuring out like what you can control, what you can't control in a rapidly changing environment is important. And I did that for myself. I would remind myself like, what is my role in this? What can I actually control? And I'd remind other people when things started getting overwhelming. Well, let's think about what our role in this is. What's our piece of the puzzle that we can solve? And how can we do that to the best of our ability? And that gave us an ability to focus on getting the most important things done. So I'm really lucky, I think, to have had those experiences because they helped me an awful lot in managing this crisis.
That point about control is a really good one and probably useful to all of us to remember in these days. At the end of the day, what did it feel like you had most direct control over as a Start of School Committee? What are those things that you constantly focused on? Like, these are the things that are in front of us that we can actually do something about?
Yeah, the things that I can focus on is our teaching, related to our teaching. So I think that regardless if we're teaching in a hybrid classroom or a virtual classroom, we all can figure out how to create the best possible experience. And the technology enables some things that we can't do in a normal classroom, and it prohibits some things maybe that we can do, but not that much actually. And if we're clever, if we think about it, we can really put on a great academic experience. And that is where I had people focus their attention. We ran teaching meetings all summer. Our faculty are amazing. It's really, really impressive what people did to get ready for the fall. And you know, the early returns from the fall have been outstanding. So we had, you know, weekly teaching meetings. We had one-on-one consultations with faculty so that they get to know the technology, practice, do trial runs. All of that was very controllable. And then the things that aren't controllable or more difficult control have to do with health. So we try to give individual faculty members, staff, students control over where they took classes, whether they taught or studied from home or studied at Darden. Try to give people ability to control their destiny in what's possible. And, you know, you can't control everything. So, you know, I know, families will still continue to have health problems. I know people have lost relatives and loved ones, and that part's tough. That'll continue to happen. I don't like it. I wish it wouldn't, but that's sort of the nature of the beast. But we do control, you know, how we interact with each other. And, you know, to the extent possible, I think the way that we control this problem is by being respectful of each other, you know, washing hands, wearing masks, keeping a 6-foot distance, doing all of those things that that keep people safe. And my observation, from to the extent that we can control our behavior on campus, students, faculty, staff have all been incredibly respectful, and everyone's wearing masks, everyone's keeping distance, everyone's attesting to their health condition beforehand. And I couldn't be happier with how our piece of that is turning out. I think people are taking things very seriously. And I was just talking with another faculty member. I'm on my way over to this podcast, and we were both saying that we feel safe on grounds. Like we have control over the important things, and that makes me feel good. Like we're doing what we can to control the situation while recognizing we can't control everything.
That is great to hear, and not a shock to those of us who have gotten to obviously spend a lot of time with the members of the Darden community to hear that people are taking this seriously and are looking out for each other. I think all of what you just mentioned intersects with so much of the value set that's already present at the Darden School and in UVA generally.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a wonderful community.
So some of our listeners may be wondering a bit about what a hybrid class is, and Darden made a significant investment in technology this summer. Do you want to talk a little bit more about a hybrid class and what that looks like and the technology that facilitates that interaction?
Yeah, we have an amazing technology team. It's the envy of the university, and I've seen classrooms at other universities. Ours are second to none, better than most. So a hybrid classroom itself is a room where you can fit a subset of students in the room, and they participate live just like they would in any case discussion. And then a set of students who are online at the same time. So the classroom is actually a discussion with all, you know, in our case, in the first year, it's like 65 students with 20 in the room and 45 online. And it's a live discussion where people in the room can talk to people online and vice versa. We have a normal case discussion. It's actually pretty easy to generate that discussion. And there's maybe a little differences in that there's a slight lag sometimes with getting to people online. But overall, it's actually very fluid. and we can talk to each other. We can have a normal case discussion. It's just that not all of us are in the room. I mean, the real shock to me, which happened early in the summer, is that if you look at our classrooms that might normally fit like 65, 70 students in them, those numbers went down to 20 students in the room. And I thought, how the heck are we gonna make this thing work? The hybrid classroom lets us do that though. It allows those 20 students to stay in the room and interact with the people online, and we have a normal discussion. So that's kind of how it works.
So one of the things that we talked about here on the podcast with faculty and with our current students as well, is just the concern that faculty have for the craft of teaching and their investment. And you've even mentioned it here in this conversation about all the conversations that were happening during the summer. I wonder, as a faculty member, how do you have to prepare differently, maybe the same, for a hybrid class versus an in-person class, or a virtual class versus an in-person class? Does your preparation look different? Does your approach look different? How do you leverage the technology and really adapt to that medium?
Yeah, so there's actually some really neat things that you can do when you're teaching through Zoom that you can't do otherwise, or that are easier to do in Zoom. So we can have breakout rooms for people to talk, and we do things like buzz groups in normal classes. But 65 people, and it's a big, cacophony in the room when that happens. When you have the breakout rooms online, you give people space to get to know each other in a smaller setting and discuss issues in a smaller setting. That's easy. It's easy to run polls and have some interactive presentations when you're doing it online. In many respects, I think the only thing that changes is the orchestration of the case. Like, you have to be thoughtful and preload polls beforehand. But in a normal classroom, like I teach with laptops down, so I don't really have an ability to run polls quickly. Whereas when it's online, you can. You have this extra technology. I think people are trying to figure out and make how to revise their teaching plans to take advantage of the technology in ways that they couldn't if we didn't have it. So, the big picture is, I'd say the classes are the same. It's the same content. It's the same rigorousness of education. And the execution, though, like the orchestration of the case, that becomes a little different. You have to do a little more planning up front to make sure that you're ready to go with your breakout rooms, and you let your tech know exactly what you're planning to do every day. But once you do that, we have this awesome team that helps us execute things, and it runs flawlessly. I hadn't done a ton of online teaching before this, and I'd never taught a hybrid classroom. I've actually been really amazed at just how seamless the process has been and how easy it has been to run the technology. It's a bit of work planning up front, but in the actual execution of it, in the actual classroom, it works really well.
In those hybrid classes, for the students who are participating virtually, do you have to be a little bit more mindful to make sure that they get into the flow of the conversation, or are there processes that are in place to make sure that they're able to participate in the same way as the in-person participants?
Yeah. So yes, I'm very mindful of it. But, having said that, I'm mindful of it in the normal classroom too, about who's participating. So in some ways that's not new. And in some ways it helps you, the actual separation helps you make the problem easier. So for instance, I will think, if I've called on a couple people in a row, let's say in class, I'll think, yeah, now's the time to get to somebody that's online. And how do I spread the love, so to speak? And I use a bridge student to help me in that process. And so that's a little different, actually, because normally in a classroom, I would make all the decisions about who to call on. In a hybrid classroom, I have a student help me, and I ask them to look for new hands. I ask them to spread their love, get people who haven't participated recently into the flow of the discussion. And the student helps me manage that. I think that's really a useful thing to do. So, or it's, uh, it's a useful help that I had not had in the past, and a helping hand I hadn't had in the past. So in some ways you learn things from having just being forced to do them in a different way. I've actually liked that quite a bit.
Well, it's early days here, I recognize, but how is everything going start of school wise? How do you feel about the way things are progressing thus far on grants?
I feel exhilarated. it's funny, I'll tell you, I'll share a little anecdote. I'd say every day after I leave class, I've been calling Joanne Meyer, who runs our online learning and so much more at the school. But she's the one who helped put together all the rooms. Her team did all this amazing work. And I'm just glowing about it every time. You know, she laughs at me. She says, "Oh, you're still on the teaching high." I'm like, "You got that right." I think part of it is we spent maybe 5-6 months planning for the fall, for the fall semester. And that was a really, you know, just long, exhausting process. It's just nice to be back doing the work that we love to do. And I'd say, you know, the other faculty that I've talked to, I had a faculty debrief last Friday. We've been doing them every Friday. We did them in Q4, and we're doing them now at the start of school. I think just the relief that faculty have in terms of being back to do the work that they want to do and the excitement they have to be doing it in a new way is amazing. I've been saying to everyone, you know, our goal this year should be to make it new, take what we do so well and care about so much and find a new way to express it. I think that everyone's really enjoying that process of making it new, thinking of new ways and learning and doing it with the students. You know, one of the great things about this culture is students help create the experience. So everyone's really come together in just a wonderful way. I couldn't be happier with how excited and invested the students are in this experience.
Yeah, I was struck by the email that you sent out with that line, "Make it new." I was wondering how you arrived at that, because it does seem really apropos, because, you know, there's not a lot of point in sort of comparing, you know, where we are right now to a quote unquote normal time. Like, this is what it is. And, you know, we are operating with the circumstances that we have. So let's focus on making this the best possible version of this that it can be, and, you know, seize upon opportunities that this presents that we may not otherwise have. How did you come up with that?
I just had somehow that phrase came into my head at some point in the summer. You know, in the spring, I think it was such a rapid transition. It was basically all we wanted to do is to give people the support they need so that they could do their work and just make a rapid transition so we could do it at a high level. But it couldn't be totally new at that point in time. Having said that, people really did buy in and find new ways to do things. And I think we learned a ton even in the spring. The line "Make it new" actually has a old history. It sort of talks about the historical recycling of ideas. The poet Ezra Pound, not to be too philosophical, used it in the creating modern poetry, and it sort of had the same idea behind it. It's like you had all the classic literature, and, you know, it needs to be refreshed and made, you know, current with the times. And he actually took that line from a much older line, like many thousands of years ago. There was a Chinese king who had a similar line about "Make it new every day, replenish yourself, renew every day, make it new." That's not an exact quote. I wasn't quite prepared to give you the exact quote. but I like that imagery that the basic things, pardon me, in life, the most important things are enduring. But, you know, you need to think about how do you create something that's meaningful for our time. So it seemed to fit. And it seemed to give the right spirit of what we're trying to do this fall. And it's nice. I think it also captures the way the diligence with the faculty and the students about how they go about their work, you know, really engaging in this process and thinking about how do we put on the best possible experience with all these new tools and technology that we have at our disposal. So it's probably more, you know, maybe more philosophical than you were expecting, but when you're in quarantine, I suppose you have a lot of time to think.
Well, I will say this, Tom, I'm an old English major. So ultimately, any reference to Ezra Pound here on the podcast is always welcome. So we don't talk about nearly enough modern poetry. Maybe, you know, so thank you for making that possible. So one of the unique things about the class of 2022 is that there will also be students starting in January. For our listeners, you know, they may not know about this group, or maybe some of our listeners are, in fact, starting in January. Can you talk about the inspiration for offering a January start for the class of 2022 and where that came and what the process has been, planning process has been like for these students?
Yeah. So the idea came from a problem that we were having in that the immigration laws have changed a lot. The execution of them have changed a lot. The enforcement of them have changed a lot over the last year and a half. And I won't get too much into the details of that other than say it's infuriating the way that they have changed. It's upsetting to say the least. And we weren't sure that we'd actually be able to have a way to get our international students into the classroom this year, to get them to Charlottesville. So the embassies were closed. It wasn't clear when they were going to reopen. There's some chance that they wouldn't reopen. We wanted to find alternatives that would provide them a way to get to Darden. So one thing that we thought of was maybe if we just give it more time and let the virus die down, and we get deeper into the fall, that people will actually be able to get visas and join us at Darden. So that was the genesis of it. Just sort of buying time. You know, I proposed this to the faculty. The faculty totally bought in. It's actually a pretty big lift to have another section, but our faculty were extremely willing to help with that. So we created the section and then there was all the planning that goes into creating another entry point for students. You know, admissions had to find a way to fill the seats, and they've done an amazing job. We have a full section for the fall. Faculty have to figure out how to pick up more teaching on an overload basis to do that. We had to go to the registrar to extend the calendar. It's really like putting in a whole new class, and we did it, or a whole new cohort, and we did it all in a matter of a couple months. It was just a really impressive team effort to make that happen. And I couldn't be more delighted that we're able to provide that opportunity for people to come. As it turns out, we'll have some international students in that class in the January term, but it certainly won't be limited to that. It'll be a wide range of wide group of people in it. So I think that's important for us. You know, international students bring so much to us as a community, helps expand our horizon. If you want to be a business leader today, I think you need to have global experience. We want that in our class, and this is one way for us to do that. You know, we've also provided online opportunities for people that would prefer to join that way. My goal is that we're all able to get together sooner rather than later, and I'll be in person. And with the January cohort, in that spirit, I'll mention, by the time we get to the second year, everyone will be taking the same classes. Everyone will have had a summer internship, including the January starts. So it's going to be a similar experience for everyone as they move through Darden. Just the timing's a little different.
I have been struck by the focus on ensuring that these students feel included in the full class. That's something that has been a regular part of our admissions conversations. And I know that that has also been something of a watchword for everybody that's been working on the January start, that these students are members of the class of 2022. And, you know, a lot of thought and concern and the sort of focus being put into ensuring that they are right there with their classmates that started in August.
Yep. I think it's been a focus of admissions, been a focus of faculty. It's also been a focus of students. You know, I've been really impressed with the student leaders at the school. Oftentimes in their conversations, they talk about how can we get them involved? How can we make them feel like they're the normal, you know, they're just a part of the class of 2022. It just makes you feel great to see people care for each other in that way. But that's what I would expect to take place at, you know, at our school.
So with everything that's happening in the world, Tom, what would you want our prospective student listeners to know about where things stand at the Darden School right now and sort of, you know, what the next few months might look like here? What would you want to share with those prospective students?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost is, you know, it's a very safe environment relative to other places in the world. You know, there's no place that you can go that you get away from COVID. So we're all, you know, we're all worried about health and we're all managing it. But Charlottesville is a pretty nice place. It's not that dense. It's a more idyllic setting, and it's not a bad place to be. It's certainly not like bigger cities that are struggling with this problem. The other thing is, I think it's a wonderful community. We tend to take care of each other. We try to take care of each other. And it's great to see people come together in this crisis. It's heartening in many ways. And the commitment to providing an outstanding education is the same. I mean, I really feel good about about the way that we've prepared for this fall. And I love how everyone's just bought into the process. You know, in many ways, you can think about how you want to spend your time. And in many ways, I think being in business school, if you have to go through COVID, it's not such a bad place to be. You can be productive. You can learn a ton. You can grow. And when we get back to normal, as we sure the heck hope we do in a couple of years from now, you'll be ready to go out into the world and take your career to the next step. So, you know, I feel really good about where we are.
And that's great to hear. And I would say no surprise to those of us who have sort of been around over the summer, just kind of aware of the conversations that are happening, all the things that we've talked about here on the podcast. I wonder, what are you looking forward to in the months to come? It sounds like you're teaching right now, and that's been really energizing for you. Anything on the docket that you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to a break. I'd say the big thing for me is being back with people and being back teaching. I think is just so energizing. For me, it's a huge relief and to see the smiles on my faculty colleagues and the students just makes me feel terrific. I think we're all just so happy to be doing the work that we love to do. From a personal perspective, I hate to admit it, but I am a little tired. It's been a long haul. I don't think I've taken a break, you know, since early March. And with teaching, it doesn't give you much of a break. So it's 7 days a week since then. I do think once we get up and running and the momentum of the semester gets going, that'll carry us along. And I might be able to get a little bit of a break with my wife and kids. I think crises like these are tough on people personally, because you take time away from family to deal with a crisis. But, you know, if you're in a leadership position, that's what you do in these times. A little bit of a break could be nice at some point. I'm sure I'll get that.
Well, Tom, we're so appreciative of everything that you have done over these past months and continue to do for the Darden School. I mean, I will say, as someone, again, who was just on the periphery of those conversations, struck by just how much thought and planning and effort was going into getting things ready for the start of school for our class of 2022. And obviously it's not like it stops once the students show up. There's continued thought and continued adaptation, but done a great job. And I know I know that it was a long summer, but it has to be nice to finally have everybody here and sort of started. And then, obviously we got the January group coming, but to just have things underway, it's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah. Makes it all worthwhile. That's true. That's for sure. It's extremely rewarding. I think, another thing that you get in times of challenge is people are willing to step up, and you get the camaraderie that comes from that hard work. It's that feels good.
Well, Tom, thank you for carving out some time for the podcast. It's always great to talk with you. And, anytime you want to come back and talk modern poetry, we're right there for you.
Well, I think I'll have to brush up some more, but I'd love to do that. That'd be fun. Thanks for having me, Brett. I appreciate it.
And that was my interview with Tom Steinberg, Senior Associate Dean for the Residential MBA Program here at the Darden School of Business. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.